Never heard of you before.
It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown preacher.
Good morning, beautiful people. Unknown Preacher LA, season 3, episode 2, and we're thankful to have you join us. I'm your boy LA, aka Lonzo, aka Mr. Nobody, trying to tell everybody about somebody who can save anybody. And with me today, my ride or die, Bernadette, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am great, man. Happy 2025. I didn't get to say it to you. God is good.
Yes, happy New Year.
Yes, indeed. And I'm happy to have you all join us for this serious and much needed episode. And hey, Bernadette, I want to ask you this. I just said Happy New Year. Do you do the New Year's resolution thing?
I don't. And it's funny that you ask on today, because today is what's known as National Quitters Day.
Uh-huh.
So statistics show that people who make resolutions typically quit on today.
Really? That soon? Yeah. I had no idea. Thank you for sharing that. I did not know. I know, like, so I'm an avid, I go to the gym on a regular basis. And so this is a time of year I really resent, I despise, because it's like the parking lot's packed. You can't get on equipment. And I'm sitting here like, I got to wait until, for the gym, it's usually mid-February. There's some of them hang in there to about mid-February, definitely before March. But right at mid-February, it kind of lightens up again. So I'm sitting there like, I was just telling someone yesterday, I said, they need a section for the ones who are doing New Year's resolution and then everyone else. But wow, day 10 and they already quit. That's interesting.
Yep, it's called National Quitters Day.
And wow.
But no, I typically don't make them, but there are some things that I always start the new year out with, you know, wanting to put more focus on, you know, doing some things better and, you know, trying to commit to doing more reading, you know, yes, this year. And, you know, I got a list of books that I'm going to read this year. And so it's like small commitments like that. And,
yeah. Yeah, I'm like you. I've never been a New Year's resolution. I think for me, life is a resolution. Like, I'm always, there's always something that I'm striving for, saying, hey, we're going to do this. And God's will, this will be done. It'll come into fruition. So I just treat life in general that way. But yeah, so I'm with you on that.
Yeah, And Sunday, and I know that because I was, you know, studying for my sermon last Sunday, and the sermon was just a closer walk. And so, you know, I talked about how in December we sometimes go into like a reflective mode, and, you know, we walk the whole year out, and, you know, there's some highs and lows that we reflect on, and, you know, some, it's different emotions that's evoked. But but then, and I just come to the conclusion that I just want a closer walk with God. I mean, there were some days that I rushed some prayers, you know, as I rushed out the door and, you know, with the busyness of life. So,
I am so glad you shared that, because I was thinking about that. Was it this morning or yesterday? Like, when it's something, it was yesterday. If I'm saying, I think I need to accomplish this or go this path, and I'll pray about it. And And sometimes I just want to make certain it, you know, and that's what we have to be careful of. And so I do want to make certain that I'm hearing more of God and less of what I say needs to be done. And so sometimes I move a little too fast, and I could tell I could do an entire episode on that. So thank you. Yeah, that's good stuff. Appreciate you. Hey, so last time we were on, it was for Christmas, I think, and we talked about, I think I was telling you about The Kid with the Broken Halo.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite Christmas movie. Did you get to check it out?
I haven't. I'm going to make sure my next downtime, I'm going to make sure I take a look at it. I need to write it down, actually. Because if I don't write it down, it's not actually real. I'm at that point in life, so...
No, I get it. I ended up watching it afterwards, and I started to send it to you. But what about The 6888? That was another movie we've talked about.
Now, I did get a chance to watch that. Yeah.
Cool. What do you think?
It was good. It was good, but you know, I feel some type of way because I'm just now learning about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a touching story. And it, you know, brought about different emotions and stuff. But I feel some type of way because we didn't hear, I haven't heard about it before now. So
I agree. And then the emotion piece, I cry like 4 or 5 times. I'm a crier. No denying that. Especially when she gave it to the general, like when she finally told him off, I was like, wow, this is, yeah. But I was like, you know, thank God for Tyler Perry sharing this story. And after the movie, I thought about, so I just read a book, Growing Up Urkel, by Jaleel White. And he noted in his book, he was talking about how challenging it was back then to get through that red tape when you had. And throughout his book, he was sharing all these ideas he had for TV shows and movies. And I was like, wow, these are great ideas. But he couldn't get through those doors. And so to see us now and to see that we can see the, you know, see and hear about these stories, I just think it's definitely moving in the right direction. And the movie, just the bravery, the patriotism, it was just on another level. The courage of the women, despite all the odds, lack of support, man, just a powerful movie. Yeah, so... But if you haven't seen it, I'm telling you all, you should check it out. The 6888, it is pretty good. So, and today I'm talking to the founder of UN50 BJ Council. And man, what a journey, what a service. We know we can do better to improve those relationships between police and community. So kudos to her for trying to do that in unconventional ways. So I think what she's doing is really a game. It could be a real game changer for police and citizen outcomes. Just really educating the community. What do you think, B?
I think you can. I agree with you. That, you know, sometimes we need more, what's the word that I'm looking for? And it's evading me. But representation matters.
Yes, yes.
You know, when we're able to relate or see someone who looks like us.
Yeah.
It may, you know, it could very well help to build a level of trust, and break down some barriers.
Yeah. That is so spot on. I'm glad you mentioned that. And there's a level of comfort. I don't care and this is the thing, we're always either we're attacking one another or we're trying to act like there's no elephant in the room. But until we're able to talk about race, until we're able to really just talk about the hiccups in policing, and then until we're ready to tell citizens, and that's what I like about what BJ's doing, she's not just giving anyone a pass. She's saying, okay, you have a responsibility too when you engage with the police. But going back to your point, which is a good point, there's a level of comfort. And that's in any group. Any group that you're in, you're going to automatically feel a level of comfort. And so you're going to identify with that representation. And unfortunately, sometimes you get a pass when you don't deserve it because of that representation. Because I believe everyone should strive to earn respect from others. But anyway, I totally agree with you. I'm so excited about this interview. I've seen the journey. She was heaven sent when it came to Kinston. And we'll talk more about that as well. But before we go on our commercial break, anything else to add, Bernadette?
No, I don't think I have anything to add. I'm just excited to hear this segment, this episode, and, you know, glean some pointers and, you know, really see it from a different perspective.
Yes. Well, she's going to drop the knowledge. So when we come back, and thank you, Bernadette. When we come back, BJ Council, y'all. See, this episode is brought to you by the Black Farmers Hub and by Peanut and Zeb's Grocery Stores. Both serve as a platform for Black farmers and food and beverage makers. Inspired by their family legacies with a mission to provide a platform for Black and Brown farmers. Support their work by visiting thesweeterjuice.com as they consistently advocate for food sovereignty and assist with alleviating food apartheid. The Black Farmers Hub and Peanut and Zeb's Grocery Stores. Beautiful people, we are back. And I just want to say, man, last year was an awesome year for the podcast. 67 episodes in 2024. So thank you for taking the time to hear what we have to say. So we started this podcast to spotlight ministries and community service. And I just wanted to say that the mission is still the same. Nothing has changed. And today we're spotlighting a service that can save lives, prevent injuries, and a service that can help citizens de-escalate intense encounters with the police. And how do I put it? I'm serious when I say this. So this is something that can impact police community relations on a national level. And so my guest today has her arms around this issue. Welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA, owner and founder of UN50, BJ Council. BJ, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Alonzo. I really appreciate it. 64 shows in 24. Is that what, did I hear
67.
Congratulations, man. Thanks. That's awesome. That's a blessing. That's great.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you. Really, and also thank you for coming on. Thank you for your service and having the vision to really affect change and impact our community is much needed. So you're a blessing to us today.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I want to say this because I am big on giving people their flowers. You were heaven sent for me when I was in Kinston. And that's the truth. I was looking at video footage from body worn cameras, and I can tell you that most of the time, force used by the officers, it was because citizens weren't complying. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes someone, it would be a friend or a relative, you know how it goes. They would tell them, hey, not to comply. And that seemed to escalate the situation. So so when we spoke and you told me what UN5O were about, I just knew we had to have you in K-Town. And I really appreciate that impact and the collaboration. So I think with your assistance, we really did some great things. So thank you.
Thank you. And actually, your leadership obviously made an impact because they still call me to this very day.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, so it says a lot about you.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. And so I want to really spotlight what you're doing. So can you tell our listeners about UN5O and what was going on that sparked this great idea?
Well, I started this in 2015, and I think folks know, like, in 2014, we had Michael Brown and Eric mm-hmm. Garner. I think both of those were 2014.
Yes.
And I think shortly after that, Trayvon Martin was somewhere in that range. And just looking at what was happening in the Black and Brown community, and then also just law enforcement. I mean, I have law enforcement. And I love the profession, but it was a job, right? And so I was looking at an interview after one of the incidents of the news media, and this individual, this Black male, said, they are always down here harassing us. And as a retired police executive, I was thinking, well, why didn't you say something?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know that. I'm not going to know that. And being Black and being a Black police executive and working in a Black community, I realized that statistically Black and Brown communities don't file complaints.
Yeah.
And so that kind of was, when he said that, it was kind of like I was sitting there yelling at the TV going, well, why didn't you tell me? Because I'm, as an executive, I'm not going to know unless you tell me, community.
That's right.
And so that was kind of the catalyst to get people to try to change that paradigm shift in the Black community, that we do want to know that, and we will do something with the complaint if to the officer. It doesn't mean we're going to fire them. Yes. We're just going to try to get a behavior change. And we can't get a behavior change, then we may consider, you know, further, you know, discipline or whatever. So that was kind of the catalyst to get Black and Brown folks to understand what their rights, and then also to try to let them know that not every police officer is a Chauvin.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That you basically interact with that particular officer, but don't apply that to all officers. So that was, in a nutshell, that's why I started it.
I love that story. It's my first time hearing it. Wow. And I'll say kudos to you for following that passion. 99% of the time, I think most of us get into this profession because we want to make a difference and do the right thing. And then I think, people of color in this position, we want to make certain that our community has a voice, I think. And so to hear you say that, it just not only kind of gives you those chills, but it just reminds me of why I got into it. So mm-hmm. thank you for sharing that. And I know oftentimes people don't see our vision. And when they don't see it, it's hard for them to understand and support you. So mm-hmm. how challenging was it to put this into fruition?
Well, you know, you and I talked about this a little bit. The doors were open for me because of, obviously, I was in Durham and then the rank of deputy chief, and I was known pretty well. So the doors opened pretty quickly as far as getting into the spaces. Durham PD, and, you know, I left the agency under a scandal, and they actually were the first ones to give me a contract. Mm-hmm. And then I did some work here. And then I came, you know, I kept knocking on the door of law enforcement, and then I got to you, and basically you and Durham, and then I did a little bit of work with Hillsborough, not mm-hmm. Hillsborough, but Carrboro. I did a couple of places in Carrboro for them. So, I mean, it's been a little difficult getting in the front door of law enforcement, so I kind of go into the community now because that's who I built it for. So
yes,
I need people to understand UN5O was built for the community. It was not built for law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
because the goal was I need people to get home. And that's one of the things that I really, in the beginning of the workshop, I try to do a minimum. I don't even go out if people say, can you do this in an hour? And I'm like, no, I don't do this. I mean, 2 hours, because it's such a sensitive topic. I want to give people time. So what I tell people and your listeners is I'm not here to change your perspective on law enforcement. You can come to my workshop not liking law enforcement, and you can leave my workshop not liking law enforcement. The goal is for you to get home.
Yeah.
I need you to get to the house, and then you can, you know, file complaints later. But the priority is I need people to get home, because the thing that connects the community with law enforcement is we both want to get home.
Mm-hmm.
We both want to get home.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say you kind of touched on where I was going with this, because it does seem that we're in a world, and honestly, that's probably a fallacy of mine, but sometimes it does pay off. I do try to change that perspective a lot. And some people laugh at me and say, you know, in some cases it's a lost cause, but I just refuse. And I can tell you a story about that as well. But we're in a time now that we just everything seems so divisive, right? And you know, whether it's on social media and they're clickbaiting, or you know, just these perceptions about police, and then sometimes law enforcement, the perception about a community. And so it's just, what advice do you have for communities that seem to have that divide as it relates to police and community relations?
I get it, right? Yeah. I mean, we're talking about information that is historic. Yeah. I mean, the Black and Brown community, the Black community with law enforcement. I mean, that's history. But what I'm trying to do, as I say in my film, is that we're trying to move forward from those mistakes that were done with people prior to us.
Yes.
Right. And it's changed. I mean, we've got individuals that are moving forward, and the community, that's what I try to really stress. You operate on that officer that you're interacting with. Mm-hmm. You don't apply that. You don't apply Chauvin to Kinston. You don't apply Chauvin to Durham. You don't to New Bern. You just don't do that. You work with that individual, because they're, like you said, 99% of the officers who do the work. I mean, it's just like any other profession. You got some folks that you're like, why are you working here? But they're there, mm-hmm. right? And you figure out how to make them either fit into the program and understand what the culture is. But as a community, we have just got to begin to understand that it's not your grandfather's policing agency.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, statistically, when you watch the media, and I get what they see, you also have to understand, you know, Black bodies sell.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a narrative that's being pushed by mass media that doesn't exactly fit the narrative when you think about 200 Black persons were killed by law enforcement in 2024. Yeah. But you look at the number of homicides of Black bodies, it's tripled that.
Yeah.
Right. So, and most of those incidents that Washington Post tracks are called, they were called. It wasn't like they went out and just shot them just to be, you know, having an interaction. Those are 911 calls.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we've got to figure out it. And then I think the other thing that I also talk about, Alonzo, is that it's time for Black and Brown bodies to be on the front line of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for us to serve and patrol our own communities.
Yeah.
This is the time. If you're paying attention, they're hiring, and yeah. they're paying good money. They're paying for education, take home cars. I mean, you know, and mm-hmm. so this is an opportunity that we should take advantage of. Some of these communities, because that's how, if you look at it historically, Confederate Army persons went into law enforcement, and that's how they built their wealth in their family. You know, their grandfathers were law enforcement, their fathers were law enforcement. And that's how they built their wealth. That's how they ever go to school and all that. And I just feel like we need to take advantage of this moment, because a lot of people are exiting right now.
Yes. I love what you're saying. And I don't know if you knew this. So I have three uncles and six cousins who were in law enforcement.
No, I did not know.
My uncle was like one of the first African-American detectives in Raleigh. And so I grew up just admiring this profession. And I thought my uncle was like the coolest guy in the world, you know, especially he was a detective. So he's wearing suits and be like that one day. And so we really need that representation. Yes. And sad part is after the George Floyd murder, so many of us have really, it was already at unacceptable numbers in my opinion, but so many have really you know, pushed away from this profession. And the sad part is we need them now, to your point, now more than ever before. And this is a great opportunity. So, man, I just...
And, you know, Alonzo, just to get to touch back on that too, you're right. Before George Floyd, you know, black and brown was like, no, I want to be the police. Even when I was at Durham, I would see some of the young kids and folks out on the corner, and I'd walk up to them and say, man, I need you to be the police, right? I mean, I'm actually recruiting on the corners.
Yes.
Before they, you know, start getting a record. I mean, I see what they're doing, and I'm like, they hadn't been arrested or anything like that, but you kind of know, you know, if you don't move away from this, I'm not no way I'm gonna see you in the next couple of years, right? No, BJ, I don't want to be the police because I know everybody. And I said, that is the exact reason why I need you to be the police officer, because you know people, you know, and it is because of that connection that you're going to save lives. It is because of that connection. Instead of you saying I had to make a decision in a split second, you took a full second because you knew that community member, because you were raised with them, you came up in the community, and you could actually save a life because you took a minute or a second longer because you knew them or knew somebody that could help you get them to where they needed to be.
Wow. That's so true. That human factor, that human element, not only saves lives, but it also enhances that connection you're talking about and that trust, because I can tell you, like, and I've seen the older officers who were mentors in DPD, but also I remember going to homicide, and just about every case that was solved there, it wasn't because I was doing this spectacular detective work. It was because people trusted me, and they would call and say, hey, this is what happened, you know? And so there's just so much value when you establish that connection and really have that representation. So very good point. Very good point. Let me ask you this too, because I know some have said that, and I already know what the answer is, but what do you say to people who say, okay, well, why aren't you addressing the officers' conduct while interacting with the community? You're talking about the citizens, what they should do. Why not talk to the officer about that? And I have my own opinion too, but I just, what do you say to that?
You're right. Yes, we should be doing that. And I think that's cultural. And I think I take a lot of pride in when the leadership, during the time that you and I were there at Durham Police Department, we spent a lot of time telling and making sure that not only the police executives, the chiefs, the deputy chiefs and captains, but we made sure that lieutenants and below, all the way down to the ground and sergeant, knew what was expected.
Yeah.
It was very clear that Durham Police Department was a community philosophy organization. That was a culture. And it was very clear that it is what the community wants, not what we want. This is what the community, this is how they want to be policed. And then we also stay connected. We really took, we would meet with them. The executives would come down off, you know, out of the C-suite and actually talk to them. I know we used to do that. You may have been gone by then, but we would actually go down and have the officers come in, you know, an hour before their shift. And we would talk to them. The deputy chiefs would come in and talk and hear and listen to them. So when you set that culture up.
Yes.
Inside the building, and it's very clear because a lot of times what you get is as a chief and as a deputy chief, I'm going to a community meeting and I'm saying, this is what we're doing, this is my community, this is my philosophy, blah blah blah, you know, I got a 5 o'clock meeting, I'm talking to the community, 7 o'clock, 7:30, they get stopped and that officer talks like, that's not what the chief just told you, acting all kind of funny. That means that my message as an executive hasn't gotten down to that officer. And then that's when that citizen who may have just left my meeting says, you know what, Chief, I just left your meeting 2 hours ago, but at 7:30, your officer did X, Y, Z. I need to know that, because that means my message isn't getting down to that officer, which means his supervisor either isn't in, either buying into my philosophy and the culture, or isn't communicating it well to that. And then I need to take care of that. But if I'm making it clear in the agency all the way down to the front line, because I'm home, you know, we home at 3 o'clock in the morning. And so the community is correct. So what you have to do is find out and talk to, go in the building and sit down with the leadership, you know, have those, you know, what is your philosophy and is it getting down to the ground? Because that, just like anybody else, you know, it, go to McDonald's and they serve you cold fries. You go, who are you looking at?
Yes.
Who are you looking at? You're looking at the person who hands you the cold fries, right? You're not looking at the CEO, but the CEO is responsible for making sure you got hot fries.
Great example. Great example. And then I'll just add, because you basically said what I, for those who were asking you that, it, it's really that department internally, they should be addressing that. Yes. And on the front end, on community relations and how you treat people. And then on the back end, how you administer discipline, right? Because what we, the consequences for misconduct speaks volumes on what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And so I love that answer. I love that answer. So every community, and you touched on this too, is different in their expectations and their values. How do you shape your program for each community with the different needs?
Actually, I don't. And what it's the core of it is always the same. The message, like I said earlier, is the same. I need everybody to get home. But what I do in the beginning, I spend whatever amount of time I need to, is I ask the participants that come in, and either the organizer, you know, what is it that you need? What is it that you're hearing from the community that, you know, why are you bringing me here? Right. What is the concern? And then when I get in the space, I want to know, what is it that you want to know? What is it that you don't know? And then I also say, this is the building, this is the space to ask me anything, and in a manner that you want. I don't want anybody to sugarcoat and trying to make it sound all pretty and everything. I mean, this is the you need to ask me what you would ask after you saw something on TV with a police interaction that in your mind was just ugly. And you were sitting there talking about across the street or got on the phone or whatever. And however you're having that discussion, you need to have that in here. Because I'm the person, I feel like what I do that I've been doing this for 10 years, and I'm retired, and I don't really do a whole lot. I spend a lot of time looking at, if you see an incident of an interaction with police on TV, I'm still looking at it 6 months later.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to figure out, okay, so we saw that, you know, the community's upset, but now the cameras are gone because they kept playing on a 30-second loop for 3 or 4 days in a row, right? Yeah. But then after the cameras are gone and stuff starts drilling down, you find out, oh, it wasn't like they portrayed it.
Yeah.
have you watched the Curly, the Olympic guy that was just arrested?
No, I have not.
Yeah, this Olympian black male was just arrested and was assaulted. Based on, I should have done it before I did, but I haven't gone too far down into that, but I've kind of gone around and pulled up as much of the video as I think I need. Mm-hmm. He's an Olympian. He's a U.S. Olympian individual. He was trying to get to his car, and I think police were already there doing something. I think they were investigating something. Yeah. And he wanted to go forward, and they were like, no, and it went south. Mm-hmm. And so he was arrested. He didn't get killed or anything, but the concern from the community is that's excessive force. Yeah. And I'm not saying that there isn't, because I haven't taken a deep dive in it. But some of the video, if you look at it, the media doesn't edit it, and I got to get to the body cam. If you look at it, he was with a female companion, and just briefly, you can see where she reached out to get him, and he pushed her off. She reached out to stop him. and he pushed them off. And then he went on and interacted with law enforcement, and then we have the story on the media. So I'm not saying that it wasn't excessive force. What I'm saying is, based on what I've seen in this, in one of the videos, she tried to stop him from engaging.
Yeah.
And now we have this. And so, and you get, and now the community in that particular community and across the country, we've been seeing this video, they're all upset. Right. And I think also, let me just go, when you come into my workshop, it's a very candid and raw discussion. Yeah. It is not solely the law enforcement officer who's doing so. It takes two to tango. Mm-hmm. So I also look at, you know, what did the individual who was part of this interaction, what did they do that they could have done differently, yeah, or maybe they didn't do anything. Maybe it was all the officer, but we got to look at it as that there were two people in this interaction, and we need to look at each of those individuals, you know, action during that and action during the interaction.
Yeah. And I've been at those workshops, and I'll tell you, I was really surprised. I've been in enough community meetings, you know, where you get feedback from the community, but I was surprised and impressed at how open they were when you were facilitating those workshops. It just kudos to you, but they were very candid in Kinston, very open about how they felt about us, things that we could have done better. And, mm-hmm, you know, I definitely took notes, but it speaks to the effectiveness of your program. I'm just, you were reminded me of that as you were talking about your workshops, and that's a big deal. But also, like you just said, it goes both ways with things that we can do. And I remember as a young male, before I got into law enforcement, a friend of mine was riding with me, and he threw something out of the passenger window. Officers conducted a traffic stop, and from day one, they asked, "What's your name?" He refused to give his name. And he kept, the officer asked for probably four times. And then not only did he do that, instead of opening the door and engaging, he called for backup. And I'm thinking like, wow, man, just give your name. But it definitely escalated, and they physically tussled with him, arrested him, charged him. And it was like,
wow.
And I'm just thinking, you know, that could have been avoided with, mm-hmm, they had went through you and 5-0, right? Like, mm-hmm, just really understanding. So, yeah. And so, you know, like 21st century, we're in 2025 now, and we're at a time where kids are raised to question everything, right? And if they feel uncomfortable, they're very vocal about it. Why, I admire that to a level, to some degree. I also understand, especially with those encounters, those interactions with police, and what you're doing. How do you get them to, and I'm not saying all young people, but how do you get them to understand? And I've actually seen you do it masterfully, by the way, but how do you influence? Listen. You have to get a taste of Treats of the Realm, man. Two sisters who love making treats for special occasions, or if you just want to treat yourself. Hey, listen, you can find them on Facebook. You can find them on IG. Or you can email them at treatsoftherealm@gmail.com or give them a call, 910-322-3667. Treats of the Realm. And I've actually seen you do it masterfully, by the way, but how do you influence that demographic to comply and complain later?
Thank you for the kind words. It's difficult, and you're absolutely correct. And Kinston actually afforded me a lot of opportunity to kind of hone some of my skills as far as communicating with youth and receiving some of that information. Actually, I still tell this story today. It was a young man that in one of the classes in Kinston, and he said, and I had to add it to my presentation because I didn't have it. He said he was put in the back seat of a car and cuffed, and they, you know, and he didn't know what that was about. And I was like, oh, I forgot to do the, you know, just what they just were investigating. Right. Yeah. So you were just being held and, until they got through. And I had totally forgot about that. But he taught me to say, oh, I forgot that part. I need to let folks know that sometimes you will be detained. Detained was the word. I'm sorry. And I didn't have it in there. And he was saying they pulled me in the back of the car and they handcuffed me. And so now I can explain that depending on the type of crime that you may be detained. So anyway, but listening to the youth, they're angry.
Yeah.
And they're looking at this stuff on their on the social media, these loops and these, I mean, just viral. I mean, and never had an interaction with law enforcement. I mean, that's the energy that I get and that you're talking about. Their energy is coming from what they're seeing on social media. Mm-hmm. And so the conversation that I try to have is, look, I just need you to get home. I said, what is it that you want to do? Right. And do, because you don't have to go down this road, because this is something that's avoidable. Mm-hmm. This is absolutely totally avoidable. Because if you go in with that attitude, there's a possibility that you could get arrested and worst case scenario killed. Mm-hmm. So, and we're talking usually these interactions, especially on a vehicle stuff, we've estimated or it's estimated 20 minutes.
Yeah.
20 minutes for you to control your emotions. And then if you find the officer is unprofessional, tell your parents, go file a complaint, because it's enough happening out here with our youth that we don't need law enforcement involved in doing something to hurt you, when we know that a lot of youth are dying, you know, because of some of the things that they're involved in. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to take law enforcement off that table.
Yeah.
That doesn't need to be a part of that, especially if all you have to do is give them the three things they need: name, date of birth, and address. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to talk if you don't want to. Just tell them, I just don't want to talk. And they understand. They may not like it.
Yeah.
But that's you're exercising your rights. And I think, and also too, Alonzo, what I have really enjoyed from this is when people come in and they're a little angst and they don't know what I'm going to do, they think it's going to be, you know, pro police. And I'm not. I'm just trying to help them. And often, more often than not, folks come up after the workshop and go, you know, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah.
And that's all I can ask. I'm not trying to change your mind, but let me offer you this perspective that you may not have considered. Mm-hmm. And they had not considered that. And once they go, you know, and again, it's just something else for you to think about. You can still do you, boo, but at least now you have something else that you may not have had before.
Yeah. I'll say this, and that your success is probably not as tangible as we would like it, because, and what I mean by that, just listening to you, I'm sitting here thinking, like, you probably saved lives, but how do you measure that? Like, never I went to the workshop and now I know, let me go ahead and comply to this officer's request. And if that person hadn't gone through that workshop, you never know. So that's powerful. Just listening to it. So, wow. What are your thoughts on citizens recording their interactions with police during traffic stops?
I do it. The only thing that I really stress to folks are that if you're the individual that the officer is interacting with, and if you're the only one in the car, whatever, but if let's just take a vehicle. And you know you're about to be pulled up. If you want to get your phone and hit record and put it on a dashboard, that's fine.
Yeah.
Do that. Or if someone else is in the car, and make sure you tell everybody else, you know, I'm the one that's going to do the talking unless they talk to you individually. And you can do it. It's just don't walk up on the officer with the camera saying a whole bunch. What is it? The young woman is a 10, was she 12 years old or 15 years old? I have it on my slide, on my presentation, the black female that recorded George Floyd. She never said a word. Hmm. You never heard, if you did, it was very silent.
Gotcha.
And she didn't interfere with, She just took the video. And that's the thing. Officers, I mean, you know, it's a safety issue. I'm dealing with person X. I don't need another person X, Y, and Z coming up on me with a camera. You stay over and far away from me so I can do my job. Because remember, it is a job.
Yeah,
and you can video. But if you're in a car by yourself, hit record, put it on the thing, or either call somebody and hit, you know, I'm getting ready to get stopped. I just need you to listen in, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no. And if anybody tells you you can't record and you out in the public, that is not accurate.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Spot on. And let me ask you this. So let's say a person, we talked about it earlier, files that complaint, right? Mm-hmm. They're not satisfied with the outcome. Mm-hmm. And we understand that maybe they contributed to the escalation, for lack of better words. What if they know, hey, that's not the case. I'm totally innocent in this. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give them?
I think now with the video cameras, and if your community doesn't have anybody on cameras, you need to walk in the building and say, how can we help you? How can we figure out how to pay for that? Yeah. You know, we're getting to a part of this country now and then to the years that everybody should be able to have. It's expensive. And, you know, and you know probably better than I, because that kind of came after I left with, you know, you got to store that stuff. I mean, it drills down to a lot of dollars. But you need to talk to your elected officials if your law enforcement doesn't have that. But what I get a lot of in with this thing, this conversation that's going on with interaction with law enforcement, they're always wanting the officer to be fired.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not, I mean, it's just like saying you want the person who handed you some hot fries fired. No, we're not going to do that. You know, what you want is a behavior change.
Yeah.
And what people, and we need people to commend officers as well, because what I also talk about, you fail to realize that as a leader, when you accommodate or send me kudos for my police officers, it's good for the officer, but it's also telling us as leader, this is the expectation my community is saying they want.
Yeah.
They're saying to me, this officer was really cool doing X, Y, Z. So I know as a leader, okay, well, that's good. So I need the rest of my officers to at least come up to this par. Right. And then you're helping, whether you know it or not, me do the culture. You filing complaints, just don't expect an officer to be fired because it's a job. Because I think people have a tendency to forget this is a job. Most officers are really trying to meet expectations because they got mortgages to pay. Yeah. They got bills to pay, college to pay. They got the same thing everybody else got.
Yes.
And if you got a job, people should understand that. And by you filing complaints, also, if you say, well, I filed a complaint, they didn't do anything. Okay, maybe in your mind they didn't do anything, but you don't know that as a police executive, I may be sitting here waiting for that third complaint to come in and I'm not getting it.
Yeah.
And I could go ahead and terminate this individual. And then let's say I don't terminate the individual and the individual does something that brings mass media down. Now what you've done as a community, you actually can say, I filed a complaint. Now we got a paper trail.
Mm-hmm.
And so now not only is the officer in trouble, the leadership is going to got to figure out how to do the dance too. Because now they didn't do what they were supposed to do because you, the community, I've been complaining on BJ. I've been complaining on BJ. And now here's a mass media. So now the leadership is responsible. And that's when you start seeing deputy chiefs and chiefs getting terminated or at least resigning early.
Yes. Yes. I love that answer. Wow. It's so much to unpack from that. No, the accountability piece is spot on. And and the charge to the community to keep pushing through because that's what it's about. It really is.
It really is.
Yeah. We need to feel. And I really like what you said at the very beginning, you know, about us as a people. We really don't file complaints that often at the end of the day, and which really adds on to this story of why we're not satisfied, you know, mm-hmm. right? The squeaky wheel theory. Mm-hmm. We have to voice and demand mm-hmm. how we want our police to police us. And what we expect from them as well. Every other community can do that, and we should have that same luxury of doing it as well. Mm-hmm. So,
Before we move on, I want to stick for that community responsibility, because does a community member feel? Because sometimes what you see is you, especially in the media, sometimes after the incident occurs, you see community members. Yeah, that officer has always been like that.
Yes.
Right. So in if we really want to push the button on that, so then if you've known that officer has always been like that, do you own some of that responsibility?
Yeah.
Because you didn't tell nobody.
And their minds, I don't think they do. I think, and even we could go even deeper to the street code where you just don't take a formal approach to complain about, you know, things like that. You handle it in other ways. Yeah. I remember as a patrol sergeant, it was an officer who they were complaining about to me, and I started asking questions, and they said, "Come on, man, y'all already know he doing that." And I said, "No, we don't." Yeah. And because honestly, I've heard little rumors about it, but we're not chasing rumors. So, and I told them, this is what you need to do. Oh, man, y'all ain't gonna do nothing anyway.
Mm-hmm. And, That's it.
Yeah. And I ended up in IA, and this person actually did, their name came up the right way, and things were done that was supposed to be done. I'll leave it at that. But it just speaks to what you just said. I don't think sometimes we realize the influence we have with our voices.
And I appreciate you saying that. It the voice of the community, because actually, in my personal opinion, this work that I've been doing for 10 years, the voice of community, actually, in my mind, is the beginning of police reform.
Yes. We got a lot of work to do. I'm glad you're still out there doing it, man. We do. Hey, as you reflect on your service and the people you've impacted, what are you most proud of?
What I am most proud of is I still have relationship with community members.
Yeah.
And after I left the agency under that cloud, I'd be walking around and, you know, with my head hung down, you know, because that was a heavy thing for me.
Yeah.
And I'd be in a store, Lowe's or something, and they'd be like, "Hey, BJ. You know, you were one of the best ones." Mm-hmm. You know, "Hey, BJ, you were just, oh man, it's okay. It's going, you know," just, that's from the community.
Yeah.
Right. And that meant more to me than anything.
Yeah.
In anything, that the community knew that I was there for the right reason. I wasn't trying to mess with anybody. I was there just to serve the community the best I could. So I'm just proud of the fact that I still have relationships, and in fact, one person that I really work with on the South Side, and she's the mother of a homicide victim. Mm-hmm. And she and I are close today. In fact, we just did an interview together, you know, talking about the work that needs to still be done in some of these communities. But it is the relationships. You know, I had an officer tell me, I said, when I was a major, he actually told me when I was a major, he said, you are all right, police officer. Hmm. And I kind of said, you know what, I'm kind of okay with that, you know, because I serve warrants, I answer my calls, but I enjoyed standing on the corner talking to folks. Enjoyed sitting on the porches, you know. So what is it I can do for you? You know, one of the things that brought me to tears when I was in district, was a district commander, and we spent a weekend on the South Side. We had the bus down there, the community bus and whatever. We just kind of hung out. CAT team, crime area target team, they kind of focus on problem areas, and we just hung out.
Yeah.
And this mother and daughter sat on the porch all weekend. And when we finished up Saturday or Sunday, I think we might have stayed till Sunday, but as I was pulling out, I stopped and I saw them, and she was like, both of them, and she said, "You know what? We really enjoyed having y'all here because we could sit out on our porch."
Mm-hmm.
Sit out on your porch. I mean, think about that. They're saying to me, "We can't sit out on our porch."
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was in tears when I walked off that porch, because that is, we should all be able to simply sit on our porches.
Absolutely.
And so for me, that's what it's about. It's about everybody should be in a safe community, no matter who you are, what you are, whatever. That at the most, you should be able to sit on your porch. And if I can do that as law enforcement and do it in a way that is, kind to those who are out there possibly doing harm to the community, and allowing folks who want to live at peace, then that's what it's about.
Amen. Amen to that. And we didn't talk about any of this. So I, number one, you know, with your head in the cloud, I don't like hearing that, but I do like hearing that you recognize the impact, right? Because those are life changing moments, and those are priceless. Like you can't put a price tag on someone's life. And that's what you did. And I can tell you, as a young officer, you know, I didn't get it all the time. And you and Steve, I'll say this: y'all were community police driven before community police driven was cool. And when I mean by cool, I just mean by, like, right now, we're in a time ever since Ferguson, it was, okay, it's obligatory now for a police agency or a police chief and his people to talk about community policing and connecting. But back then, it wasn't mandated. It wasn't expected, for lack of better words. And so, I grew up as a young officer thinking things were black and white. And, you know, either you're doing bad, you go to jail, or you.
Right.
That's how we, you know, you call. And then it takes that wisdom and those life experiences, and then really listening to the community. And I remember as a captain, they put me, there was some issue at Hoover Road Apartments. And Mayor Bell was there, and the community was talking about crime. And I said, "Hey, give me 30 days. We'll bring crime down." And the fallacy on my part was, I told my people, "Whatever it takes, I need these numbers down. Shake every bush, turn over every rock." Right. Those were the exact words I used, and crime actually went down. I come back 30 days later, I'm thinking they're gonna, you know, be like, "Man, thank y'all." And they were like, "Wow, we feel like hostages in our own community." And I just remember this young lady, she had like three little kids, and she said, "We already feel like we're nothing. Y'all are making it worse." And when I tell you, BJ, it was in like 2012, that stays with me.
Yeah.
And so I had to learn those lessons that way, that, hey, we got to do. So I say all that. That was a long story.
Just I'm glad you shared that.
You and Steve have done so much for Durham PD, and it's a blueprint on community policing. And I think that, you know, y'all definitely deserve credit for that. Others too, but I'm just saying right now, that's who stands out to me. But so thank you. And I already know you're not in the cloud now, but yeah, just know that you definitely made an impact in the right way. But as we close, I always give my guests the floor to talk about anything they want to, words of wisdom, talk more about UN5O, if they're interested, community or police, how to get in contact with you. I'll give you the floor.
Thank you. You know, just kind of piggyback on what you just got through, that lesson you said you learned from 2012, that basically also says that's another plug that community members need to join law enforcement and patrol their own communities. I mean, I just firmly believe that this is a time, and I think community policing is still here because the person I was just talking about, who the activist that used to do a lot of work, she was complaining about she doesn't see officers get out of the car, but see, that it's a shortage.
Yes.
It's a shortage. So you chasing calls right now, and you start filling those seats and filling those cars. Now you have time to get out because you got enough people to do calls and those types of things. So I need folks to start thinking about, you know, it's an opportunity. I became a police officer because I needed a job. No other reason. I majored in sociology at North Carolina Central University. I didn't graduate. Asked my dad for a car, said, "I'll never put my hands back in your pocket again." And I was pulling down 3-4 part-time jobs, and somebody showed me, you know, that vacancies, and it was like basically making, you know, one check instead of four jobs. And I, that's why I became a police officer. I needed a job, and that's, people have to think it's a job.
That's right.
And take advantage of that. So I appreciate this opportunity. You and 5-0 is out here to just get people home, get people home. That nothing else but that. And then also try to let you know that law enforcement, you know, there's a human being behind that. You know, I'm just as nervous as you are. Yeah. Right? I'm not a superhero. Yes, there are things that we do because we have to push through the fear. That's part of the job.
Yeah.
But we want to go home. We want to go home. And you know, I'm also trying to start working with and do volunteer work with the Orange County Correctional Facility. 5 brothers and sisters coming back out of the prison, you know, because they're going to be interacting with law enforcement. And I don't need them getting caught up, you know, simply because they've been through the system. And then the first person they look at is somebody interacting with them. Because sometimes if BJ just got out of prison and 30 days later, the break-ins went up, my officers are going to go talk to BJ. It ain't personal. That's my job. That's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to let them know, don't try to control your emotions and get through. And that's the big thing for everybody. Get through the interaction. And if you don't like it or like the way they talk to you, then file a complaint. So you and 5-0, we have a film that we released last year, it's called Hashtag, with the hashtag HUEMANS, humans, hashtag humans, a guide to get home. It's a little less than 25 minutes. And it actually has an updated version, what we call an updated version of the talk. So sit down with your family and your children, especially, you know, folks out here driving and stuff, and it gets you through. You don't have to come to a workshop unless you want some really detailed conversation. This film will give you enough information on how to safely interact with law enforcement and get home, because that's the priority. It is the priority. That is my goal, to get people home, not just the community members, but law enforcement. Law enforcement. Everybody needs to go home, because everybody has, you know, that's where the love is. That's whoever. That's where it is. No matter where it is, just get home. So, thanks for the opportunity, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And can you repeat the site again so they could go on for that guy?
So it's on YouTube on my U and 5-0. U and 5-0 is Y O U hash the symbol, but you can write YOUAND 5- and the letter O, U and 5-0. And my website is UN5-O.com. But it's on YouTube, hashtag HUEMANS, a guide to get home. Like I said, it's a little less than 25 minutes, and hopefully folks will take a look at it.
Please, please do. Thank you so much, BJ, and just thank you for everything you've done and for saving lives, because that's what you're doing. So God bless you. BJ Counsel, y'all. Don't forget to follow the Unknown Preacher LA podcast. We're on all podcast platforms.
It's the unknown, unknown. It's the unknown, unknown preacher.